Cool. Welcome back to the afternoon session. And as promised, we'll be going through the reports, your small projects. I think Carl is not muted. I will mute you. You're muted now. That's okay. Now, so the way we will be doing this is that, how do we give you feedback on that project? And we've chosen to simply work out a report for each and every one of you. How do we base it? Well, I promise you that you would have a hard time getting below 75 out of 100 points if you handed in good solutions. We stand by that. I think most will get significantly more. And we, I'll go through the solutions, and I hope that we can throughout have a discussion of the various problems. And then, meanwhile, the plan is that Carl will finalize the reports, and Carl and Zoe will be sending them out by mail. So, yeah, we have the KUID on Absalon, which you have access to, Carl and Zoe. And so that's the plan, but you won't have them for now. I'll just go through what it all looks like to us from here. Yeah. And I should make sure I also have the chat visible like that. Okay. So, first of all, I should apologize for the misnomer small project, because that's misleading. This should perhaps have been called the initial project because it's by no means small. And let me just start by saying you all did very well. So you have nothing, or at least only little, to fear because you did great. And grading it was perhaps the harder project. So Carl and I have done our best to do so. And if you want, we're willing to put out the grading code, if you want to call it that. In order to give you the maximum amount of feedback, we want to send the reports to you and work out these reports. So, and let me just say the motivation behind this small project or initial project. We wanted you to try a real challenge where you did not know if you had done well. You know, have a test set where you don't know the solution, you don't know how well you're doing on it, and sort of deliver a solution blindly. Not unlike how it's done on Kaggle. And we also wanted you to individually run ML algorithms so that you would have the machinery in place. And we wanted to force you to try both a tree and an NN-based algorithm so that you get a feel for the differences and similarities. And this I want to ask more about. And then the description file, that was simply meant for you to trigger some thinking about the models. How did you optimize them? How big are they? Did they take long to train? Do you think they're good? All these thoughts are in place. And by asking you to describe them shortly was the purpose of that. And so now we hope that we have ensured that you have tried yourself to work on a data set iteratively through and all the things to consider. Regarding tree and NN-based algorithms, I'd like to ask people what you felt were the biggest differences. Please speak up.
Speed.
Haida. Speed. The NNs take forever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, the ease of setting them up, it's so much faster to make the tree-based algorithm works. They work out of the box a lot more often.
Yeah. It's true what Trevor from Stanford said, that they are the closest thing to an off-the-shelf algorithm that works on most problems. Yep. Okay. Any other comments? Let me just go a little with your comment. Meanwhile, Haider, speed. I hope you agree that speed is actually of fundamental importance. It simply allows you to do more things if things are fast.
But it seems, I mean, I might be wrong, because the scope of the small project, it wasn't so intense. But it feels like the neural network algorithm can be constructed in a way to maybe be applicable to a bigger amount of problems. And it can be maybe polished more. There is more customability with the neural network algorithm.
Yeah. I think especially on the first point, there are so many things that trees can't do, which is why it's good to immediately recognize what you need. If a tree-based algorithm is enough, or if you need something smarter and bigger. Also, LightGBM is faster than XGBoost, which is already fast. Did that influence the choice of some of you? Don't worry, it doesn't affect your grade. You can say it now.
All right, I will say no, and say I had so much trouble getting the general algorithm to work. I did not consider speed at all. I just tried to get a working, something functioning. So I did not really think about the speed of it. If it worked but took an hour to run, I would probably have said that's fine.
Okay. Did any of you run something overnight? I mean, something that took 8 hours?
No. Oh, I did not.
Others?
Only when running the Shapley values.
Yeah, they take a long time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I did some Bayesian optimization hyperband thing. And I didn't have a GPU, or at least I didn't use Google Colab, which I could have done. So that took a lot of time. That was like a couple of hours, I think.
Okay. And Rasmus writes that he ran T-SNE on a CPU for clustering. That took a long time. Okay. Any other comments or questions? All right. Classification results. Let's jump to it. So first of all, here are what we think is the closest to the variable ranking. This is the frequency with which each of the variables were used by you in solutions. And so R5 was an R hat and R eta were the most used. And essentially all solutions had them in. But not all. And as you can see, after 12 variables, there's a big step down, which probably reflects the output of different ranking methods. So if permutation importance points to 10 and SHAP points to 10, and there's an overlap of 8, that yields 12, that could easily be the explanation for this. And then it simply drops down. Regarding...
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Is it possible to say, I don't remember, what these values represent, or would that take too much time and a whole nother course?
No. Here it's just the frequency with which you used them.
Yes, but I mean, I was just wondering, what are what the values what is R5 and like is that possible to explain or would that take hours and hours?
That would take quite a while, but let me just say the top three, for example. When an electron hits the calorimeter, if it's a truly an electron, it creates a narrow shower that stops early before it gets to the calorimeter that sits behind the calorimeter made for electrons, which is the hadronic calorimeter. And so if it's not an electron, it tends to be wider, both in phi and in eta, which you can think of as theta. So this is the width in eta, theta and phi, and the fraction that goes into the hadronic calorimeter. And these are just super powerful variables for seeing, you know, is this really an electron or not? And so all the others are of that sort as well. But I'll come back to it a little bit.
The order. I think that is funny. It's there.
Sorry, what is funny? The order?
No, the order, the verfatter of.
The author. Yeah.
The
author that reflects which algorithm was used to reconstruct this electron candidate. That's what's meant by author, who wrote this candidate. And so there is a difference whether you start in one way or the other. And for that reason, this is included and actually makes sense to have. All right, you actually read the name. Da, 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 da. How did you do? The answer is here. So this is the distribution of your log loss values. And in orange is all solutions, and in blue are best solutions. So if you submitted more solutions, all of them will be in the orange, whereas in blue will only be the best ones. And as you can see, there's a clear sort of point at which you can't do better than this minimum point. And most of you reached that point or close. So congratulations on that. And then there was a tail out this way. And well, of all of you who did best, of course, we went in and did a ranking, and we're not going to show the full ranking. But let's discuss it first. Well, there's a very clear minimum, and this is simply the information limit. There isn't more information than this. You can only get it so well. So anyone with a solution around here, pat yourself on the shoulder, which is essentially all of you. And also, I think it's I'm still going to put some names out there, because all those who got below 0.15, I think deserves an honorable mention. So you're listed here. And da-da-da-da.
Applause,
in
please.
Third place. Sorry?
Applause, please.
Yeah, let's applause. You're right. Everybody unmute now, okay? And then, in third place, we have Helena with Light GBM for 0.1479. In second place, coming in, is Laurent with XG Boost 0.1475. And in the lead, first place, coming up, is Maria with Light GBM for 0.1437. Cool. Well done. All right. So that was the classification game. And then we'll go to the regression results.
Could we hear which optimization method was used by the winner?
They're in the description files. I don't have them right here.
All right.
But actually, Maria Laurent and Helena, are you online?
Can't see. Oh, yes.
Yes.
All right. I'm thinking, how would you feel about if I published your description?
That would be fine for me.
Fine for you?
For me too.
Okay. I just need to ask Maria as well. But that's actually a good idea. All right. Yeah, please speak up and join in. All right. Let's go on to regression results. First of all, here are the variables. And I have several comments to that. First of all, the top variable is actually what is Atlas's own energy prediction, which means it's a result from others. And I thought about, so that it goes top is no surprise. I would have been surprised otherwise. Also, I considered not including it because it's to some extent your competitor. And I might change next year, but this time I said, all right, include it. For next year, it might be part of the competition to compare to that one and argue why you do better or not. So another fun thing is that in all of the top, none of the variables from the classification are to be found. So the width and how deep it goes in does not matter very much for electron when you're trying to measure its energy rather than finding out if it's an electron or not. And so these two are two very, very different tasks. And that also tells us that the two are probably not very correlated. Okay, so they were some of the lessons, which is why it's a good idea to inspect these and see what is driving this.
Sorry?
Yeah?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Question. Because I felt like I asked one of the TAs or you exactly this question, whether or not you could use the feature importance, the features you have found important when they were identified as important with a decision tree, if you could use that for the regression as well. And then was told that you could do this because it because there's a feature of information in how these are found, but this shows that that was clearly not something you could do.
You could only use it for the clustering, right? The clustering and the PID, the identification, the classification, have an overlap.
Mm-hmm.
But the regression, no. Sorry if that was the information given.
All right.
All right. Any other comments or questions or critique and injections? All right. Well, then let's see how you did. And the same pattern repeats itself. So here, as you can see, most people got to quite good a result and then a tail out with a few outliers here. And here, it's fun how the distribution actually shows that there's not a clear minimum. It's not as clear as before, which means it's not certain that we're exactly at the information limit here. Probably we are. But this time, the best solutions are more Gaussian. And there are actually people who managed to come with two solutions which were better than sort of the mean of the best solutions. So that's also cool. Of course, I haven't looked into how different they were from the best solution here. And again, I would invite you all to unmute, please, and be ready with applause. Honorable mentions are as follows. Mads, Christoffer, Katja, Helena, Asger, Anna, Alberto, and Markus. Congratulations. You all managed to get a score below 8,600, whatever that relates to. And then in third place, we find Edwin with 8,290. Congratulations. In second place, we find Finn, also using Light GBM for 8,152.5. Congratulations. And in first place, we find Haider Al-Sadi with 8,094.6 Light GBM. Congratulations. Okay. Any questions or comments when you see this?
I have one question.
Yeah, please.
All of them are tree-based models. Was there any neural net models that got like close to the top?
That I have deep in a nasty printout running from here to greater. Let me just see what the status was. It's a good question. Yeah, it preserved from running over all your solutions, and we want the regression part. I'm not going to put it up. XG boost, Light GBM 2, XG boost, SK Learn GBM, Light GBM, Light GBM, Random Forest, XG boost, Algo, XG boost, Light GBM, XG boost, XG boost. Light GBM, Random Forest, Regressive, Random Forest. Only down at, well, you can see here how many I mentioned. Do I, at 8,727, get an NN TensorFlow atom, followed by one tree-based, and then a Keras-based, and then a neural network-based. They were far down.
Okay, that was my impression too, that they were a bit harder to make really good.
Yeah, they are. And some of the things that they need are a transformation of the variables, for example. You need to do a lot of pre-work on them. And things like author, how do you feed that in a nice way? I mean, these are just like postal codes, right? They are 2, 4, 8, and 16, or a combination of these. I mean, make no continuous sense.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions, or we move on to clustering? So clustering results. And here are the variable usage, which I thought would be near identical to that of classification. They are similar, but they are not entirely identical. For the clustering, it's hard. I mean, it's an underdefined task. What variables do you choose? What are you aiming at? It's really something that takes insight and domain knowledge. And there were not few who wrote me and said, what are we trying here? What's the aim? The aim, frankly, was to force you into trying running a unsupervised algorithm to see what the hell you got out and what you would make of it. That was the main aim. And then judging whether it sort of fitted what was electrons or not, that was secondary. And you might say, but hey, my performance wasn't as good. We'll get to that in a moment. And the answer is, it doesn't matter, as you will see. Meanwhile, I just want to jump and do an interlude. Here's a map of Denmark. And the coloring scheme is actually from an unsupervised clustering algorithm, which was asked to cluster houses in Denmark. What are they like? And the thing is, if you divide it by region, well, then you don't get things that are similar. But here, all you got was the latitude and longitude, the density, and the price per square meter. And suddenly it makes quite realistic maps of Denmark, not knowing anything, right? So the center of Copenhagen is different from the suburbs of Copenhagen, which is different from the country around Copenhagen. And it, the country around Copenhagen has small sort of urban centers, which are similar in Zealand. You could of course make more. And here it recognizes that the center of Aalborg, Aarhus, Vejle, Skanderborg, Randers, Esbjerg, all of these are similar, and the country leading up to it are similar. And then because of distance, you divide Jutland into two, but in fact, they're very much the same. And so instead of doing sort of a, you know, by region, you divide Denmark into five and see how price development are in each. You can simply divide in a very different manner, and you can even plot it and look at it and say, that makes sense. And then say, okay, I now continue with a way of you know, putting housing into categories according to this algorithm. So that's quite useful, I would say. All right, back to performance. So here's the clustering accuracy distribution. So this is the accuracy obtained when each cluster is assigned to be either electrons or not electrons, and you ask for the accuracy overall. Let me ask, what is that? Any ideas?
Yeah, that's if you guess completely randomly. It's because I think the data is unbalanced by 75 to 25.
Yeah, I agree almost entirely. If you guessed random, you would get that. But are you forced to guess randomly to get that or not?
You can guess by like some different parameters than what are electrons and what are not. You can cluster by something else.
Exactly. If you do not include the electron-like variables, well, this is where you end. Those good for identifying electrons. Yep. As can be also seen is that there's a tendency you can actually get into the 90s in accuracy with an unsupervised classification algorithm. And I think the best supervised was upwards of 95, which means you can reach quite far, but not all the way. And that's a typical pattern. If you can do supervised learning, do it, because there's more information and it's easier to get out. But it can also be done without the supervision, which I think is interesting. It's just hard to know where you are if you don't have anything to base it on. But to some extent, this is a way of basing it, right? Your eye, if you know Denmark, can tell you, okay, this looks right. All right, now we get to scoring your solutions. And this is a point where I'm just going to ask Carl, progress or things going well?
Yes, but I noticed a lot of mistakes when running on the big data set. So all the students, so, but it's it is generating PDFs.
Okay. Okay, we're still debugging. Yeah, returning to scoring. So this is somewhat how we have decided to score your projects. So from even handing in a solution, you get 65% of the points right there and then. And if you miss parts, then we might subtract from that. But that's just the ground score for handing in. This is hard work and you perform. And then there are different inputs based on, you know, what were your choice of methods and algorithms and optimizations? How many different algorithms did you involve in this? Which variables did you choose? And what was your performance? And this gives between 0 and 6, 0 and 6, 0 and 8, 0 and 8. And these are open, I would say, so you can actually get more. And that gives you a total number of points. Yeah. And anyway, the final number of points, the translation from points into grades will be set at the end. It's not pre-set. So, okay. So how did we score? Well, let's start with the methods. So your description reports. Carl and I read them through and decided to give you, based on your choice of algorithms, hyperparameter optimization, and data division, a score between 0 and 2. And so that gives scores between 0 and 6 total. And the left plot shows if we're nice or not. I think the answer is we're nice. It's on the high side instead of the low side. And the right plot shows if we agree or not. And we do. There's a good correspondence. There were two where we were more than 2 points away from each other, but that's it. And there was one who didn't hand in any description, so that was a simple agreement. Yeah, so that was cool. And again, I forgot to ask, Haider, Finn, and Edwin, would you be okay if we if I put publicly your descriptions of what you did?
Sure.
I'm with me.
That was Haider. Finn said yes, Haider said yes. Edwin, you were also there?
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Super, thanks. We got Maria left. All right, so that was how we did it. And then there's your variable choice. And the way we did that was to say, we take the frequency of your variables and add them up. So that's numbers between, I don't know, 60 to 80 if you chose the good ones, and then below that. And then we divide it by the frequency of the top variables, which means this ratio here is between 0 and 1. And then we multiply that by 8. Well, in reality, we multiply by 4 for your classification and by 4 for your regression. And then you might say, where is my clustering? Well, we don't score based on your clustering performance. Simple as that. Nor the variable choice, nor the performance. And regarding performance, well, you look at that distribution here, and then you say, okay, how do I score that? It's not going to be a linear scale. That was actually how I foresaw it to begin with, but that's stupid. So we did a log scale, and that gives you on an open range 0 to 4. Points according to how you did. Okay, and this is for illustration, but I think it's a rough good measure. And of course you can't get less than 0, don't worry. If your algorithm just didn't work at all, you just get 0 in performance. Yeah, any questions? No. Then on the reporting back to you, this is actually what we're working out right now and are in the final sort of running of doing it. But it actually takes a while to produce hundreds of plots and numbers and putting them together and writing out into file LaTeX files and then making those. And unfortunately, for some things, we have to sort of hand change things. So it takes a little while. We also want the formatting to be good. But what do we give you? Well, we give you, first of all, a certificate for you to be proud of handing in. I showed one down here. And no, Carl didn't get 100. We just put that here for now. sorry, Carl. And then a summary page so you can know how you did. And then a solution scoring with key numbers and illustrations, and there's one page per solution you handed in. And that's for you to understand how your model performed. And, well, These are hopefully being mailed to you by Carl and Zoe right now. So it's not right now, but by the end of the day, you should have them. Please sit down after class and have a look at them. And then, and this is perhaps the most important of the whole thing, following a little bit what you said, how did you optimize things? You know, what does your file look like, your description file? Well, don't hesitate to discuss the small project with your peers. Now, perhaps you have already done that, and if you've done that, that's great. But this feedback and reflection is really the process through which you learn the most. There's only so little we can teach you, but sitting discussing it with somebody who have also done been through the same thing is really valuable. And so team up and do that after class when you have the report also. That makes it a little simpler. And what does the summary of key values look like? Well, it looks like this for a classification report. So it shows a rock curve and a confusion matrix and scores here by different metrics, right? So there's a cross entropy score. That's the one we gave you points by because that was the one. But there's also an area on the curve and there's an accuracy here. So, and by now you know what all these numbers are and how to interpret them. And for the regression, here is a lot of different metrics. We use the mean absolute deviation here for scoring, but you can also make the absolute so you don't divide here. You can also make the RMS. You can make the RMS where you cut out sort of the tails. And well, here you see the result. So here's everything in a scatter plot, and then the green is the 90%. So clearly shaved off. It looks bad here, but that's just because the dots are way on top of each other. And finally, for the clustering report, here's just the metric of how well it matched. And there's, you know, cluster zero was taken to be an electron. No, cluster zero was taken to be electron. Cluster one was taken not to be electron in this case. And then Carl has also provided one of these pair plots of the top four variables that you've entered, just so that you can see if the clustering is based on anything. And again, clustering is a hard thing. Unsupervised learning is a hard thing. What do I get out? How can I cross-check it? What am I aiming at? But I think the remark by Alexander Nissen, who talked about the T-SNE algorithm, applies very generally. He said, I always start by throwing a clustering algorithm at data just to see what structures turn up, if any. Even the latter result, meaning no structure turns up, tells me something valuable for the future further analysis. It's simply a super, super simple way of coming up with a way of inspecting large amounts of data. And I think especially production companies producing something, they should be running it, because when things go wrong, often it sticks out if you look at the data, but they just don't look at the data. And that's because setting up a pipeline that collects all the data and keeps running an algorithm on it and plots it in a nice way or raises a flag if something is wrong, setting that up is not that easy. But then again, it's 2020, and well, it's not that hard either. It can be done. And who knows, some of you will surely be doing it at some point in less than a few years' time. And then the only thing I've got left is to say thank you for all your hard work. We're very impressed with the first project, or the small project, the initial project, whatever you want to call it. And thank you to all those who handed in. It was really nice reading. Word is free. Please comment at will.
Thank you for putting so much work in this course, and especially in these circumstances. It was very hard for me, so I can't imagine how hard it must have been for you guys to have to, you know, translate a whole course into online in like, what, a month?
Thank you very much. It's appreciated. Yes, we do spend some evenings, I think that's fair to say. And Carl is laughing now because we've been on the phone the last couple of evenings trying to put reports together. So that's why I hope you also bear with us that, well, the coolest factor would have been if you had had them in the mail by now. But I guess we will deduct a coolness point from us for this. It takes a while. Also, just because your solutions vary a lot, and then it breaks the report format and so on. Thanks. More remarks, critical as well.
We've applauded the students. It's now time to applaud the teachers.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm still, it's a strange teaching situation, and I'm pondering a plan of meeting up in Fælledparken when all of this is done. But I think we don't do anything until exams are over. I can also tell you, here's just to start some thought. I get many different people writing me if I know some talented students who would like to apply their skill in data analysis, pipelines, and machine learning to data or to work. And just to give you a sense of the range, a doctor from Summer University last summer wrote me they want to screen people in East Africa for who to test for diabetes, because they can't do a test on everybody, so they want to ask themselves, who should we be screening? And they have, I think, 8,000 candidates now, but they are going to go into Rwanda as well and get 23,000. And so he asked me, anybody interested in doing that? Analyzing the data and getting your name on a paper. So that's one thing. I'll return on the point, but now I just want to... And at the other end of the spectrum, the chief of innovation for Novo Nordisk in one of the research parts, he said, Troels, do you have any good candidates we can hire now? And I said, the people need to write a thesis and so on. But how about starting with having people as students? And he wasn't set up for that, but he okayed the fact that I simply on the last day perhaps write his email where you can send a CV. And I think the downside is that it's in Molo, but he was very, at the risk of giving his words away, he said, anybody who's good at coding with data, I'll gladly hand 150 crowns per hour and they have no responsibility. So I think you should think about that and many other offers. And I hope that, it's through experience that you get good at something. All right. Any other comments and questions?
Yes, I have a question that is like general. If we go outside university or like if we want to use ML in real life, I found a real problem. And because as a lot of the neural networks we have done for the small project and now for the larger project, they don't get an accuracy of 100%. And it seems like it's like, so when you, but if you want to do something like determine who's you should screen for diabetes or something, or what data to take in the, like if, when you want to do something actually important, what kind of accuracy should you be satisfied with? Do you only say it's done when it's 100% accuracy, or is like, can you say anything interesting about, like, how you what should you work towards or something like that?
Thanks for the question. The answer is, if you do better than they're doing right now, go for it. Right? Right now, they just take random persons. Often random is what you're sort of aiming at. And then it might be that because they're capable people, they've found a way of screening. You know, if somebody is heavily overweight and a certain age group or something like that, then that might be points. But you measure how well it's being done now. And if your machine learning algorithm does as well, then go back and do more. But when it does significantly better, don't hesitate in at least presenting it. And present it in simple ways. We have, through your education, you have become very used to looking at plots and so on. Others are not as accustomed to it. And for that reason, just taking, you know, here's patient A. You selected him. My algorithm selected him. Good. Here's the ones, a few candidates with disagreement, and you can point to why. Well, I know he's not that overweight, but he has a few other features which screams diabetes. And in reality, he turned out to have it, and you would not have selected him if you can that with data. And then in the end, you say, and then I ran it on 8,000 more patients. That took 2.5 seconds, and here are the answers. I think those are the things that convince others. But remember, big ships turn slowly. And so turning organizations around is always something that takes a long time. Did that
Yes.
But don't go for 100%. You'll never get it. Yeah? Any other questions? All right. It is also 2:05, which means we've been at it for 50 minutes.
I'm sorry, I forgot to unmute my microphone, but I had a question.
Yeah.
So, when you're working in the real world and with real people, and when your work actually have real life consequences, isn't it like a very large and big responsibility to be able to use these machine learning methods to maybe help people, or like if it doesn't work the way we want it to and get bad results, then we may even make it worse. Like, isn't it like a very heavy responsibility for each one of us?
Yes, it is. And with age and knowledge and skill comes, and salaries come, responsibilities. And don't think that there are zero errors made out there. I think there are many errors and many cover-ups. Through your education, have an integrity that is perhaps more open to that. And also make sure that before you do something of consequence, check it thoroughly. You are some of the most skilled at doing that.
Of checking things thoroughly.
Yeah. But true, believe me, from now on, in the next 40 years, responsibility will most likely only go up. Sorry to ruin your youth if you think that's tough.
What happens when stuff goes wrong?
Well, you could even say, worst case, people get fired. But I think that's a very worst case. But what goes wrong? I mean, I think it's fair to quote our prime minister when entering this corona period, we will make mistakes. We if if you act on lacking information, you can't take the perfect decisions. And even if you have the perfect information, distilling it out is hard, and you will make mistakes, and people make mistakes every day.
Wow. Oh, well. Well, that's comforting to hear.
Yeah, well, I hope the comfort is that when you make a mistake...
we won't get fired.
Well, I don't know what type of mistake, but typically, if it's not done on purpose, I mean, if you do things on purpose, that's a different ballgame, but that's not what you're thinking here, I presume. But also, for example, let's say that you have a way of rejecting bad merchandise in a factory, the production outline. Well, when you implement new methods, I assume that you monitor them super closely until you gain confidence in them and do test runs and so on.
Wow, cool. So, this one other thing, when we, these office of companies that they are asking about, so you told Simon that we should only present our model if we can see that we can do a better job than they do, right? But how do we get to know how well they do? Is there some like public information available, or do we like need to contact each individual company?
No, from the data you have available. If someone else, for example, in the case of regression, right? I told you that the variable that was top ranked was actually the experiment Atlas's estimate of the energy. And so you have the truth, and you have their estimate, and you have your estimate. And then you ask by various metrics if you're doing better or worse.
So I mean, these people who were diagnosed with diabetes, how many of them were like diagnosed but did not actually have diabetes?
I don't know the numbers for that. Humans. I don't know any of the numbers.
I know. I'm sorry. That was maybe phrased the wrong way. But is it something like that they do check afterwards by human hands?
I don't know about that specific data set, but sometimes you may also, actually, very often, if you enter a company, I will bet you that the data they have is not what you want, if they have any data at all. But then your job also includes saying, what data should we try to get? What can we get, and how far can we get with it?
Okay, but it won't be like be our job to actually get the data. We will have like
might also be team. To get that data. Yeah.
Okay. We'll have another team to get them for us, right?
No, not necessarily.
Oh shit!
It depends on the job. If you do data engineering, then or data analyst, the adverts are quite specific sometimes on what you do. And in teams, there are people who collect the data or organize the data in database and then send it off to other people. And then there are just the people that turn the crank in those tables of data and then say, oh, we need this other kind of data on such and such. I mean, it really depends on the job that you get into. Sometimes you have to do both.
Okay. Okay.
And I would also say, that, just to quote the guy from Novo Nordisk, he said, look, running a machine learning algorithm, everybody can do that. That's simple. I smiled and said, all right, I'll give you the ice cube data. Please turn that crank. He's used to things that fits in an Excel sheet, I suspect. But organizing data in a logic way so that you can both go back and check that you have key numbers coming out, all of these things is part of the sort of data curation. That you make sure that all functioning is understood and performs well. It's all part of some jobs. But who knows? Maybe you'll be doing something completely different and machine learning has no place in it. Data has no place in it.
That's too bad.
Yeah, well. There are good chances out there. They're hungering for it right now. If there are no other questions, then I think we should end this session. Are we at that point? Then once again, congratulations on your small projects, your initial projects, and good luck on your final projects. I'll stop recording, but we'll keep Zoom running. And hopefully by the end of the day, you will also have a report. Cheers and have a good break.